Yeah, take that one. Nope, you pay that one. That was mine.
Yeah, I didn't bring my iPad today, so. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, I will call to order a regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, March 26, 2013, and ask that everybody please join the Board of Supervisors as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you and good morning as we struggle to welcome spring to Iowa. The first item on our agenda is public comment number one. This is a comment period for members of the public to address the board on topics that are on today's agenda. Is there anyone wishing to do so? Of course, please come on up.
No, I don't have that actual figure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what I'll say is I had a meeting this morning, and while I don't have that actual figure, Ron Christian indicated to me this morning that hourly ball has not been in yet, and that we are either all the way caught up or almost all the way caught up, but we still want hourly ball to come in and review everything.
Okay. So.
We're exploring all options, probably the best way to look at that right now. That's going to be determined based on what Ron and his staff feels is the comfortable way to look at it. But since we've entered into a contract with Olive Ball, until we can have that sit-down opportunity, we can't really address what the future may hold. Right now, we're going to look at the immediate need and then make a determination as appropriate. But the language in the contract is very typical contract type language. Can't answer that at this point. Not necessarily, because we have a provider of record that has done this on a regular basis, and so we I don't know. I can't answer that question. Okay.
Yeah, that can go anywhere, and I don't know that it's you're more than welcome to file a Freedom of Information request. And to me, it's as simple as a question to Ron. I just don't have the information for you. Yep.
Good. Okay.
Anything else for us in public comment period number one? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to consideration of minutes. We have both the minutes from the 12th of March, and we also have our budget hearing to approve.
Move approval of both the 3/12/13 and the 3/14/13 minutes as submitted.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Minutes pass. Consideration of personnel actions. We do have several action forms here that are listed.
I'll move approval.
Second.
Discussion? Hearing none. Toot?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Personnel actions passed. Consideration of claims.
I'll move approval of that.
Okay, and I will second it.
You have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Hearing none. Toot?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Claims are approved. Consent agenda. A couple notes on the consent agenda in addition to Loris's note. On item 13 on the consent agenda, there is one editorial change wherein one property number was taken out. Is that right, Lucy? Four property numbers taken out, but it's an editorial change. Does not change the intent and content of that. And then road closures. We do have road closures 1348, 1349, and 1350 as part of our consent agenda.
Okay, we'll just repeat those again. 1348.
Yep, 1349 and 1350.
Okay.
I'll move approval with the noted changes.
Second.
Hoot.
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda passes with noted changes. Let's see here. That brings us down to no public hearing items. That takes us to additional items. Discussion with the City of McCallsburg regarding control of E-18 and S-27 within the city limits. And, Paul, you brought that forward, and you guys are welcome to come on up as we have this conversation. We have representatives from McCallsburg, including Mayor America, Wally Lona.
Well, I've had a couple of conversations with the fine representatives from the City of McCallsburg.
How do you define fine?
They're sitting right in front of you.
Oh, okay.
Over the past about 6 weeks, and just a little bit of history, about, I don't know, 7-8 years ago, the City of McCallsburg took over control of a portion of two county blacktops that go through the city. In the process of doing that, they lowered the speed limit on the east-west road, which is E-18 or Du Bois Avenue in town, and they also erected a stop sign on that section of roadway, making a four-way stop at that intersection. They have some desire, apparently, at this point, to turn the control of those roadways back to the county, but they've got some concerns about the about the speed limit that was put in place and the stop sign that the city put in place. And my last conversation with the city was that I could not guarantee that stop sign or the speed limit would remain the same. As a matter of fact, it's my understanding with a couple of conversations with our assistant county attorney that the speed limit would go back to 35 because the county doesn't have a ordinance that covers 25-mile-an-hour speed limits. We really don't have any residential districts. We don't have the need for 25-mile-an-hour speed limit ordinance. So more than likely, that speed limit would go back to 35. And I guess it would be up to the board at any time whether or not that stop sign stays in place. So have I got that right? And I know you guys have concerns with the stop sign because that's the route that a lot of kids that live on the north side of town, that street shoots right down to the elementary school there in town, and that's the route that a lot of kids take to and from school. So I can understand your concern with the stop sign. So,
yeah, when we just a few more notes about that. When the city ruled that the Farm to Market Road would go back to the cities instead of the counties, the road was in bad shape. It was borderline whether, you know, we were pushing the county at that time to do some repairs on it. Well, when we got it and we figured that was a lifetime deal, we borrowed $250,000 and we fixed the road. You know, so I think we fixed it correctly. It was done. They did a good job. But like any road project, they need more repair. You know, there's always crack filling to do and road shoulder to work on and you know, like stop ahead signs and things. But and we've recouped. Or we've gotten the road use tax on those two pieces of land, you know, basically that we acquired, and I think it amounts to about $5,000 a year on road use. What I've talked to the engineer about is we would forfeit that, but we didn't want to forfeit it until we got the debt paid off. Well, we just paid the debt off on the road, which TIF actually helped with a little bit, and that's what it's for. But now it's time to give it back to the county, but in consideration, we would really appreciate it if you guys would consider letting us keep. It's actually a flashing stoplight and a sign, Paul. So there's enough kids in the north side of town now. That's the walk across area, the direct route to the school and school buses. And there's enough kids. They actually talked about making a bus stop on the north side of the road because of safety this spring, but or this past spring. But that fell through, and that's the reason that we're kind of pushing to keep the stoplight. Is I think the last count we had 13 elementary kids there. You know, not older kids, but just 13 elementary kids, which in a town of 300 is quite a few. So that's our concern. We would like to give the road back. I think it'd be better better for the county, and you know, there wouldn't be any issue about who owns what, and you could have the tax money back. But we would like the consideration of the speed limit. And if you can't do the speed limit, you know, that's neither here nor there. But I really would like to see the stop sign.
Wally, anything from you, sir?
There is, like Scott says, there is a number of children that cross at that crossing every day, twice a day. And that's why it would be nice to leave that at 35 and the stop sign. And I'm not sticking up for people, but there is people that do hesitate at that sign. I've watched them.
Mr. Chair, would it be proper to ask our county engineer talk about some of the concerns or issues that we face? And I think Supervisor Toot alluded to the fact that since we don't currently have a provision for this, it would require perhaps an ordinance. There, why don't you just use one of these, please?
That way we can keep you guys here and have this conversation.
Right. Great.
And just so that I'm sure I understand correctly, while you guys would like for it to stay at 25, you recognize that we don't have an ordinance to be able to enforce that, even if it was 35. The big sticking point for you is that stop sign.
Yes, and the children.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which is the rationale for the stop sign.
And for the record, I'm sorry, but I'm Scott Anderson. I'm on the city council up in McCallsburg. Sorry I didn't introduce myself.
Scott. Yeah, like Paul said, I don't think there's any intention at this point of taking the stop sign out. It's probably not something the county would add on any other road like that, but since it's there, I probably have more concern of removing a sign that's been there for a long time. So we have no intention of taking it out, but we can't promise in the future what could happen with it. So at this point, I could say we have no intention of taking it out.
And we recognize that with future supervisors or county engineers, as things change, that might have to change. But for now, the way we'd like to see it is we'd like to see the sign stay.
And just a little bit more about the history. When that law was changed in 2004, it was actually McCallsburg's road before that. What the law did was bring it back to the county, and then we came up with the agreement to put it back to the city. So it's essentially always been McCallsburg's road. So we don't have a speed limit that we've ever had on that stretch of road that I can find. So like you said, we're going to have to come up with one. If they turn it back to the county, we have to have a resolution or ordinance in place to set the speed limits. We're going to have to do our own study and come up with our own speed limit, and it's probably going to be higher than the 25.
Typically, what do they base that? I mean, I'm sure it was 35 miles an hour before.
It was.
Well, that brings up another question then. If it was McCallsburg's before, I misunderstood that in the past. If it's McCallsburg's before, but the county got the road use money, the county maintained the road then.
No, the city got the road use tax money forever.
On the highway?
What the law did was change it and brought it back to the county and brought the road use tax money with it, but then you wanted it back. So we had to come up with an agreement to give it back get around the new law. And that's about $9,400 a year last year. That's what it was last year. So, that's the dollar amount we're talking about, and that'll now come back to the county if you turn it back to the county.
Well, is there any issue, or is there any cities within the county that the county maintains the road, but the county doesn't actually have actually set the speed limit?
No, there was four of those.
Road you own, you delegate what the speed is.
Okay. There's four cities that were affected by that law. Two of them just let the county have it. Kelly had the same issue you had a recent paving project they wanted to pay off, so they kept it for a few years, but then they gave it back to the county. So McCallsburg is the only one left out of those four that still has the road by agreement. So And yeah, if it's county jurisdiction, the county has to set the speed limits and traffic control.
And Story County deputies do a pretty fair job. They sit up there and watch that stop sign. I think they've written quite a few tickets that people don't slow down, first of all, and don't recognize the 25, and then they don't know what that red sign is either. So
with the flashing light.
With the flashing light. But and I can see the hassle and the amount of paperwork involved in creating an ordinance or an amendment of some type just for one stretch of road for 8 blocks long to go to 25 miles an hour. And I can sympathize with the county on that. But if we don't have to change the stop sign, I think that's the most critical thing.
Well, from a standpoint of a process, Darren, what process is really before us? The fact that the city council request or is desiring of returning it back to us, do we have to go through a process of accepting it and then designating officially some standard, such as if we're in this case, if we're going to leave the stop sign there, we would need to designate that or not? I'm just trying to look at what the process from your standpoint might be.
Yeah, legally we should probably set that stop sign by resolution too, so it's enforceable. But from the road perspective, that road is legally the county's road. The only reason it's not because we have this agreement.
Right.
And so what we have to do is nullify this agreement. And it states in here that can be done by has to be in writing by both parties we wish to terminate the agreement. So.
Okay.
Take council action and then board action, and then the 28D would be nullified.
Hey, educate me. This is a flashing red light. How's that powered?
How is it powered?
How's that flashing red light powered?
Client energy has a wire to it.
Yeah. No, I'm just wondering if we're also not a big deal to me. I'm just, are we also assuming a power bill when we take this thing?
I think we assume the power bill on the street lights. Because that's where the power comes from.
That's where it comes from. Okay.
Yeah. So, and we could put that in the resolution that
it's not something I'm all that concerned about. It just triggered something in me that
I could see a line item down in the future where it says power in McCallsburg $10 a month forever. You know, and some supervisor might say we're taking that out of the budget.
Right. Yeah.
So,
Darren, you said the road through Kelly. Is that, do we control that?
That's back to the county now. Yeah.
We'll probably have to have a discussion. I'm pretty sure that's a 25-mile-an-hour speed limit through there, too.
Posted as 25.
Could be.
So if it was given back to the county and it's posted as 25 but not an ordinance for 25, it's not enforceable.
Not enforceable.
Right.
Wouldn't be.
That's something we'll have to
check. Yeah, there was a question on how the county does speed limits. We're required by code to base those on engineering study. That study used to always be done by the DOT. They'd come out and they'd check speed limits by radar. There's newer ways to do it now. And then what they do is they tally all those speeds up, and then they take an 85th percentile of what all those speeds are, and that's what the speed limit would be. And the reason behind that is they base it on what the traffic perceives as a safe speed. And the ideal speed limit is what you want all the traffic to be essentially going the same speed. If you have a lot of traffic going different speeds, that's a more dangerous situation. So that's how counties set speed limits, and we're required to do that by code.
Can we do that study, Darren, before we happen to take down the 25-mile-an-hour speed limit sign? Because I would imagine that would impact the 85th percentile speed.
Yeah.
I think that's – if you go over to the sheriff's office, they have documentation every time the speed trailer is set up of what the average speed is and what the high and the low is. And I would, if the last time I looked at that, I think the average speed was more like 45 through there.
Really?
Yeah, there was a lot of people. I think the top speed was over 90.
It is a pretty wide open road. So
yeah,
you perceive it as being safe traveling through there, so that's why it's difficult to lower it, especially down to 25, because it feels like you're crawling.
So as far as a study done that way, I guess I would question that. You know, especially when there's no obstruction or no turn in the traffic where it's a straight shot through town. But I would bet you could go to the sheriff's office and find, I think they keep that data. They gave us a copy of it.
I'll check on that. Usually you're talking about a situation where there's no speed limit out there, so this is a little of a unique.
Yeah, so, or they could set it back, set a speed trailer up, in 30 days you could see what the average was. I would like to see what it was this time of year with in spring, you know, before there's any any real, you know, grass in the ditch or any kind of obstructions. And the signs were still posted at 25, and then it'd be interesting to see what it'd be at 35, because I'm sure it'd be more. But
all right, so as I understand the process, so that you guys are clear, I believe you're hearing from this board that there would be no intention of removing the stop sign, but that's not any kind of guarantee that we could make in perpetuity. We would follow the same procedure for setting the speed limit on that road as we do with all our county roads if in fact, McCallsburg does decide to take formal action returning or nullifying our agreement, right? That's the action they would take.
Right.
So the ball's in your court to take whatever action, and then we'll deal with whatever action you guys take based on that.
Do you want to do a study first and have a speed trailer set up, or do you want us to just take the action and put it back in your court?
I would say if that's what you intend to do, I'd say go ahead and take your action, and then we'll leave the 25 up till we get our speed study done.
Why is it such a ordeal to change the code? Why couldn't you change the code?
Well, they were just saying that they need to check on county also, because the county doesn't have any 25 mile an hour speed limits on their roads.
Well, I can understand that because there's no school there.
While it logic sounds like you've got a good point, however, you know, there are so many factors in the regulations and rules governed by the DOT that when it comes to setting those things, that we kind of make sure that we have to go through for our consistency's sake. But I think it's certainly something that we, you know, can take a look at.
Sure.
And there is a process anytime you deal with an ordinance that how, you know, the time limit that goes through in order to do that. That's not to say it's not something that's not doable, but I do think the important thing is fully understanding the process that we have to go through, and the public notice, and everybody, you know, has an opportunity to weigh in on that.
Mm-hmm. No, what, matter what speed limit is, that stop sign for now is still going to stay. So traffic still has to stop, and that's right where the
sidewalk
is.
And that will help. That'll be a good deterrent. Yeah. If there's no stop sign, it doesn't matter what the speed limit was.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time. I appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Thank you for coming over today.
Well, Wally, I want to say one other thing just for humorous today. You know, I'm still kind of down the dumps because of the cyclones situation, but just to kind of add a little humor, I was thinking perhaps when I drive into your community, there'd be a big sign entering it that talking about the home of Wally Loney, one of the longest serving mayors in the county, resides here, you know. And we could probably put neon lights on that and all that kind of stuff, you know.
And who would pay that?
Oh, well, we don't even want to talk about the cost. We don't want to even talk about it. Thanks, both of you, for coming. We appreciate it.
Moving on, next item is consideration to initiate review of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan in accordance with Section 6.1 Plan Review of the 2080 Agreement between Story County, the City of Ames, and the City of Gilbert. Leanne? And Charlie, if you want to go ahead and come on up.
You can come on up, and we'd probably have a comment or two to you as well.
Morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
I did provide the board for your packet a memo that outlined concerns or points of discussion that county staff identified and then forwarded on to City of Ames and City of Gilbert staff. Charlie K. from City of Ames did reply, and so I folded those into this memo as well. I do want to just note one thing on, and I tried to set up a way to differentiate between each based on some of the stuff that Charlie had sent too. Item number 3 on page 2 of the memo, That says, what are the defined growth priority areas? Do we need to revisit these in the plan? That is a county staff point of discussion. For some reason, with email, the italicies did not get captured. So today, we're here before you to identify these points for discussion, determine from the board's perspective if this is indeed the time to initiate a review of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, and then seek direction on how to go forth with that. And I can answer any questions as well.
Well, I guess it's not so much as a question. I think the process that you used, I think that I appreciate, was the fact that, you know, staff would take a look at it from the county's perspective. We would share that with the city, try to see if there's some mutual agreement, because going into this discussion, if we've got majority of the plan that is solid and both entities are there, but we can see that there are a few areas that over time we need to really revisit and bring clarification, I think it helps expedite that whole process and get us to really focus on what we see are the critical issues. And so as you've identified these, I think that's extremely helpful from my point of view. Now, the question that you just raised, and just so that I understand you correctly, you still think that in item 3 that's potentially a probable area that we need to focus on, at least from the county's perspective?
That is correct. That is one of the issues identified by the county staff.
Okay.
I do want to mention, too, if the board were to want to initiate a review, and that, of course, that process is outlined in the 28E agreement, the next logical step, once all entities are notified of that, is for the county and city staff to sit down, define the process, the time frame, the staff resources, any other additional resources that are required. And I would assume, Charlie can speak on this, but on the county's end, I would bring that back to you as well. So you would have an idea of this is what it will take once we've initiated this for a time frame. Some expectations are outlined up front so that 3 years from now you're not wondering why did this take so long. Hopefully we're not 3 years from now. I think this could be rather expedited, but I do know Ames has some staff limitations currently. We're fully staffed, but we do have a very challenging work program. But this is a very high priority as well, because we are increasingly seeing development pressure.
My other thought, Rick, and why I think this is perhaps timely somewhat is, you and Paul are come on after this initial process had been implemented and so forth. And I think as we move to the future and looking at future growth and developments in some of these areas with annexation, et cetera, looking at our plan, our Urban Fringe plan, would be, I think, an exercise well worth all of us reviewing again, because I'm sure a lot of things that were talked about and done back then, I don't have a real good recollection of, and I just think it's helpful for us to go back every so often and review these. And I think this is what this would do, and I understand that either the Board of Supervisors or the Mayor and the City Council could initiate such a review. And I think it would be appropriate from my point of view. I think I would feel very comfortable having you two working along with our staff to have us review this.
Yeah, hey, Wayne, I think you're 100% right. I think there's a reason that when this was originally designed, it was stated, I think, a couple places that we were going to go back every 3 to 5 years and take a look at this. Well, that was 2006, and we're 2013 now, and we haven't done it yet. Now, I know that there were the actual implementation didn't necessarily occur right in 2006, but to me, it's a no-brainer that we need to go back and look at it. What I think back to 2 weeks ago, Charlie, when you were here, is you indicated, or at least I heard you indicate, that you wanted us to be careful about opening up too much. Let's make sure that we focus in and open the areas we need to open. And it looks to me like we've got a pretty comprehensive list here between our staff, your staff, and what we agree on. We got a pretty comprehensive list of things we'd like to look at.
I think you're correct. What I wanted to emphasize 2 weeks ago was Do we start at the very beginning and redefine what the goals and policies of the land use policy plan are? I mean, we want to preserve agricultural farmland. We want to identify areas that the city is going to grow into and protect them from inappropriate development. I think those types of goals, I think, are not up for review. Most of it is like, how are we actually applying those goals and policies to the action points of the plan and to the map? So I think by focusing just on a few items here,
yeah, not changing the premise of what the urban fringe plan is, just changing the way we go through carrying out to get to that goal.
And I think Leanne is right. The staffs will get together with Gilbert Ames and Story County, maybe flesh out these discussions, bring them back to the board, bring them to the two city councils. It takes one of the three jurisdictions to initiate a plan review. It takes, if there's any specific changes, it takes two out of the three to initiate the process for change, but ultimately it takes all three jurisdictions to approve that change. So getting broad buy-in and getting broad agreement on the scope of what we want to do, I think, is important.
But requesting the review is as simple as one entity, in this case the Board of Supervisors, requesting that we initiate a review of the plan.
Correct.
And it just, for the benefit of the board and everyone here, it just states that any time during the term of this agreement, either the chair of the county board of supervisors or a mayor of either of the cities may initiate a review of the plan by providing a notice in writing of the intent to so review. That's from Section 6.1 plan review.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a reason that it can't be that general? I mean, if we're going into this with the understanding that we're not asking to go back to the very beginning and say, okay, what are our goals of this thing? Can it just be as simple as the Board of Supervisors saying, we'd like to review the way we're working? Here's the work papers that we have so far in conversation between the two staffs. This would be our starting point, and now let's move ahead.
Definitely.
County staff, I think that is acceptable. Yep. And we have, if you were by action today or a future meeting, say, yes, staff, write this letter. We'll get on our agenda to have it approved and signed and include these 16 items. I think there's some direction for the staffs then to initiate our dialogue and then bring back forth points, any additional points of discussion that may come from those internal staff meetings.
Yeah, and Wayne, I'd have you go is if we know we want to go down this road of reviewing it, whatever that's ultimately going to look like, then I think I would ask the board to empower the chair today to send the letter to ask to initiate the review. Jessica's back in the office tomorrow. Leanne and her and I can get together and put together what, and again, for in my mind, it would be a very simple letter to Ames and Gilbert, just saying, "Hey, the Story County would like to review the plan," and then we get this thing moving rather than bringing it back to another agenda.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was my thought, was to go ahead and actually initiate the action today. But one of the things that I wanted to comment on that I thought was very appropriate is, as we talked about the general statement, you mentioned something very important, that we've identified these are the items, but fully recognizing that either the Board of Supervisors or the City Council, once we take a look at that, may come up with a topic or two, but obviously they would be in consultation with the city staff, as we would be with Leanne, but that doesn't preclude that we couldn't take a look at something if it was mutually agreed upon by each of the governing bodies. But I think that knowing how we've operated in the past, we lean very heavily on the recommendation of staff who works in this area on a daily basis in terms of the critical issues that we need to be focused on. So I think the mechanism that you've suggested allows the flexibility, but it also allows us to move this process forward with clearly some identified topics that we want to explore. So I would move that we empower the chair to move forward with submitting a letter in regard to initiating the review of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan.
I'll second that.
Okay, further discussion? Charlie Vand, anything to add? Okay, hearing none. Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. I will get it drafted and out. Charlie, thanks for coming over today.
You bet.
Agency reports, emergency management. Keith Morgan. We make him wear a tie on days that he comes to give us a report.
Brian, dress me up as best as you can. Morning.
Morning.
The events of the past 3 months have demonstrated the value of planning and preparing and exercising to ensure that we can provide a multi-jurisdictional response to events here in Story County. You may remember in my last visit I briefed you on our efforts in our office to update and exercise our I-25 closure plan. Well, the first major snowstorm of the season tested our preparedness in this area as the interstate was closed, and I'm pleased to report that the notification and activation of the plan went smoothly. The DOT provided truckers and travelers information on where to go as they were coming into Ames, and Ames PD, the Convention and Bureau, Visitors Bureau, Iowa State PD, and Public Works all worked together to ensure that travelers and truckers' needs were met. Work continues on the multi-jurisdictional, multi-hazard planning process. Story County is a part of this planning by representing the unincorporated areas. County agencies met early in January to collect information for the unincorporated areas on disaster-related events and planning. And Supervisor Sanders participated in the February 7th Planning Committee meeting. The next and last meeting of the Planning Committee will be on April 11th here in this room from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., and we hope to have participation of all the jurisdictions covered by the plan and the public. But the planning process doesn't end there. As considerable work, there will be considerable work that the county needs to do on behalf of the unincorporated areas after this meeting. This afternoon, I will be going to Huxley to work with the Ballard School District to refine their evacuation plans. Ballard requested assistance from our office and Iowa Homeland Security and Emergency Management to improve their emergency response planning. Additionally, my office is revising our disaster resource management plan, as documented in Emergency Support Function 7. As we work through how our office will collect resource requests from all of our jurisdictions and coordinate filling these needs, it became apparent that all jurisdictional executives, to include Story County government, are going to need to have a plan to properly provide documentation to the Emergency Operations Center with authorizations to commit funds for disaster resources. The Emergency Management Agency will be working with all the jurisdictions to refine these procedures. We have also been revising Emergency Support Function 11, Ag and Pets. One aspect of this plan has already been exercised as we had a cattle truck roll over with 65 head of cattle on it. The Story County Sheriff's Office, Colo Fire, Iowa State Vet Med, and Cowser's and Moser's cattle operations all assisted in the response. Our office is looking to improve our procedures for this type of event, and modifications to the plan will be included in this revision of ESF 11. It should also happen that our office also assisted with another cattle truck rollover on I-35 in January at the request of Polk County Emergency Management. The incident was originally called as being in Story County, and we began our response. But as we started getting on down there, it became apparent that the location actually ended up being in Polk County. But we went on down since we had recent experience with it, and Polk County asked us to do so. I'm pleased to report that our office has been able to capture over $15,500 of reallocated Homeland Security grant funds, and we're going to use them to enhance the ability, our ability to provide command and control during a response to a terrorist event. We will be using these funds to improve portable radio and wireless reception in the Emergency Operations Center, which will allow personnel to have better contact with the incident commanders in the field. We will also be able to build radio packages for our amateur radio emergency services groups to take out to communities impacted by a disaster and to provide better connectivity with the responders at the incident site, with the incident command structure, and with our emergency operations center. As you hopefully already know from the stories in the media and by following our Facebook page, this week is Severe Weather Awareness Week. Leading up to this event, I visited the three television stations that service our area and briefed them on changes to our outdoor warning siren policy that now allows for activation of the sirens for straight-line winds of 70 miles an hour or greater, or hail 1.75 inches, about golf ball size, or greater. These changes are designed to help safeguard citizens that may be outside when severe weather hits. On January 19th, we had a workshop to refine our procedures for jurisdictions to communicate effectively with the County Emergency Operations Center, and also for these jurisdictions to gain a better understanding of their requirements and responsibilities to maintain control of a disaster response within their community. Some communications issues were identified and are being worked on, and a Story County EOC User's Guide is being developed as a result of this workshop. This User's Guide will go out to the different communities so they'll better know how to interact with us. Our office also observed a Nevada Public Safety Tabletop exercise, and we provided information on our agency's capabilities and procedures to the participants. The exercise also allowed our office to get a better understanding of the Nevada police and fire procedures and capabilities. So to recap, reviewing our goals from my last presentation to the board, we have met the objectives I laid out. ESF 11, resource management, and ESF 11, ag and pets, are essentially revised. We have implemented severe weather awareness campaign in conjunction with educating the media on changes to our outdoor warning siren guidance, and we have completed the workshop as outlined. In the coming quarter, we anticipate our responses will increase as the likelihood of severe weather increases if we ever get out of this winter weather. We will be completing the revision of ESF 15, Public Information and External Affairs. That should take considerable effort as it requires us to coordinate amongst many different agencies and jurisdictions. We're also going to be revising ESF 10, HAZMAT, which should be easier as we review this plan every year. The planning process for the countywide hazard mitigation plan will continue to absorb a significant amount of time for our office. By July, it's hoped that actual mitigation strategies will be developed and approved as we continue to move towards Iowa Homeland Security and Emergency Management Division and FEMA approval of our plan. On the afternoon of May 2nd, our office will be conducting a follow-up to the workshop we had and will be working with the community of Huxley to walk through a disaster response to a disaster. I would encourage Board of Supervisors members to come down and participate in the exercise to gain a better understanding of the role of the EOC in a disaster and how disaster response information and coordination will work. During the exercise, we hope to test our first draft of the Story County EOC User's Guide, which we hope to have out prior to the exercise. Finally, the office will be very busy with grant administration, which is a necessary evil to be able to take advantage of these funding opportunities in order to gain needed funding for resources. With that, I open it up to any questions you might have.
Oh, it just sounds like you continue to be a very busy person, and from what Rick has mentioned, I'm extremely pleased to see the joint collaboration with our cities and coming together as we begin to forge a plan to move forward. I think that has just really have been an outstanding tribute to your leadership, but also, you know, they're recognizing, too, that there is a key component of all parties being on the same page to address any disaster that we might have that plagues our county. So, thank you.
Wayne, I'd just start by saying, first of all, you're correct. Heath and Melissa are doing a great job for us. We're lucky to have them in Story County. And Wally's here. He's a member of the Emergency Management Commission, and I'm sure you'd agree, Wally, that we're getting great service out of those. I would like us to talk for just a second, Keith, and just make sure the board is fully aware of what the new policy and procedure for initiating the warning siren, just a real quick overview of the process we went through, where that was initiated, how we got to where we are, and what our expectations are in terms of how many more times we're going to blow that siren every year based on that. And then the other point I'd like to make, and just correct me if I'm wrong on this, we now match what Polk County and Des Moines Metro currently does as far as blowing the sirens.
Second point first, we have actually gone beyond what Polk County does by the addition of the blowing the sirens for the hail of golf ball size or larger. This was initiated after conversations with Chief Sykosh in Ames after the May event where they had high winds on the northern part of the county. We examined, looked at, would we increase safety by blowing the outdoor warning sirens for straight-line winds? And there is always the caution that you take when you're looking at activating warning systems. The number of false positives can lead people to disregard them. So we did considerable research working with the National Weather Service, and from the initial, back in 2009, when the National Weather Service started putting tags at the bottom of their warnings with predicted winds, there's been a marked decrease on the number of times that the sirens would be activated because they became aware that Polk County was using that as a tag. We selected 70 miles an hour, which is, you could consider to be the bottom of an EF0 tornado on it. It's actually just barely underneath it. But when you look at the kind of damage that can be anticipated with 70 mile an hour winds, which is a 3-inch hardwood tree branch being knocked off of a tree, softwood trees being knocked over, it presents danger to people that might be outside. And 2 years ago, we had a camper that was killed by a falling branch and also a young child that was killed by a tree getting knocked over. So balancing that risk of desensitizing people to the sirens with the advantages to people who are outside, our most vulnerable people who don't have easy access to information, we decided to proceed. We took this proposal in front of the Fire Chiefs Association to the E911 board. It was distributed to all of the different jurisdictions requesting comments, and we did get some comments back and modified the guidance on it from there. Then it was brought forward to the Emergency Management Commission, which voted unanimously to adopt it. Now, the key to this is that our public safety answering points, our dispatch agencies, are the ones that need to adopt the policy and the procedures. Additionally, my office has looked at how we'll use our storm spotters to gather information on the storms also, and we've revised that process to make sure that taking advantage of new technology, which is web chat with National Weather Service, and also just looking at our communications, our talk groups, to make sure that we could adequately talk to them. And we have also modified that, trying to take some of the pressure off of our dispatch agencies. We, Melissa and I, will be the focal point for gathering information on what's actually happening out there with the weather, and we will provide that information to the dispatch agencies along with a recommendation as to whether we feel that we've met that criteria of 70 miles an hour. It is completely up to the dispatch agencies whether they decide to take that recommendation or not, as we don't control them. But that's been the process. We thought it was important. We will also be working with our media outlets. They are on this web chat. We'll notify them if we have time that we are blowing them for straight line winds. So there's no confusion across the media. We don't know why the sirens are going off up there. We don't see a tornado. By doing this, we hope to make them an active partner in this
now,
process.
Now, is it true or is it something that all of the cities now have notification warning sirens that they could be activated, or is that still just limited to a few?
The vast majority of our communities, I can't say definitively right now, but if I remember right, all of them do have outdoor warning systems.
And ultimately, if I'm not mistaken, with the changes that the National Weather Service has taken in terms of when they listed as projected 70 mile an hour winds, our expectation is that we're going to blow the sirens between 2 and 4 more times a year than we have been in the past, which led us to not being all that concerned about desensitizing people to the sirens. And
actually, after the adoption by Polk County, review of weather conditions in 2010 and 11 and 12, we would have activated the sirens one additional time somewhere here in Story County. We're also working to make sure that we only activate it in the area affected by it. So that has dramatically, as a matter of fact, there are less false alarm rates for severe thunderstorm warnings that include the 70-mile-an-hour tag than there are for tornadoes.
You know, one thing that would may or may not be something to consider, but anytime we do have to do it, and we can alert our local media outlets to at least announce the rationale or the reason why they're there, even after the event, what happened, I think will help the public understand that what we're trying to do is look out for the safety and welfare of everybody in those situations. So I would encourage you to consider trying to reach out to them to be able to notify as many people as we possibly could when they have to be activated or after right after they've been activated. It's just so that people are aware.
And that's that increase in technology. It's a National Weather Service chat has two sections, one for the media, and if we have to blow them for straight line winds, we'll put it in there. I've discussed it with all three stations. They're monitoring that, and they would go to that as a source, especially if they don't see a tornado warning, but they hear sirens are activating, they know to go there. And that was part of my purpose of my visit to all three of the stations.
And I think it's valuable anytime we can get the information out on why we blew the sirens. At the end of the day, though, right, what's important for the public to remember is when you hear the sirens, it
do
means
something.
Conditions are not safe.
That's right.
Seek shelter.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't matter why.
Absolutely. But I think that message should be foremost as we begin to move forward with all of our communication. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. Anything else for Keith?
Oh, that's good.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Keith. All right, we're to departmental reports and information technology. Barb, how you doing?
Good. I didn't wear a tie. I hope that's okay.
I didn't either.
I don't think any of us do today.
Shelley wasn't here to remind me of
that. I know Loris will want one.
So, I'd like to update everyone on the VDI implementation that we have done at CLP. This was a consideration for this year. It determined the need to purchase hardware. We've got a lot of computers that are outdated. The former administration felt that if we took some of the older computers and implemented them with VDI, that we could get some more life out of them. We haven't had a lot of success with this. Users have been reporting slowness, and those computers are on their last leg anyway. A lot of them are using Windows XP, which will no longer be supported next year. So looks like we tried it, but it's not going to work. So that will be something that we'll have to revisit then, the budget proposal we had with VDI or without VDI as far as PC replacement was concerned. We did a lot of things. We even upgraded the memory as far as it would go on some of those computers, and with no success. So I think we've beat that horse enough times that we've given it a good try, and it's just not going to work. Virtual servers, on the other hand, are a great addition to technology. So that is something that I'm sold on. But as far as the VDI, which is virtual desktops, not so much. A lot of our time was taken for the OSSI project. As you know, that the software implementation was completed around Thanksgiving. But there were still lingering issues, including the Vine interface was not operating correctly. Those issues have recently been resolved as of last month, and one of the most popular features of this was the Inmates Online, and that has been restored, although it does have a new look, which anytime there's something new, people complain. So people are getting used to the new look, but at least they have the information now that they need. Moving down to the phone system, the replacement phone solution was approved for FY 2014. Just an FYI that the current PBX phone system was purchased in 1997. Our new system will be IP-based, I'm working on an RFP, hope to get that out next month. Depending on the schedules of the chosen vendor, we're hoping to implement that between August and September, and this will allow us to bring the DHS, who is currently located at the HSC building, it will bring them online with our solution. They have also have an older PBX, just as we do.
Yep. And does that include conservation? Remind
me. Yes.
So everything we have in the county, there's nothing we're excluding, and we're pulling DHS in.
Anything that is on our network.
Okay.
That is connects to us with the network. That's the beauty of the IP phone system. It can write on our network, thus eliminating the need for certain dedicated phone T1s. So, yes, all of our locations will be on the same system. Last month, we completed the version 10 upgrade for our Tyler real estate software. As with any upgrade, as you saw with the OSSI, there are certain things that need to be part of our data cleanup. We're looking at things like addresses being in the wrong line, too many names on a parcel, truncating the data down. I've really been impressed with Tyler's response to our issues. I'm not one that feels comfortable when a vendor remotes into your system after hours or when you're not there, so we did shut off their VPN access, and now they can only access the system with prior approval and supervision from IT. I think that's a better way to handle it. We were coming in the morning, and there were sessions left open and just things we didn't like to see. So we're trying to work with them to provide the most support, but I think they need to follow our rules because we had asked them, you know, give us a call when you want to access the system, and they weren't doing that. But otherwise, I've been very impressed with their response to our issues. And part of this, the basic TOP package, this is the document management that was included, and that was just installed last week. We're contemplating whether we need any kind of training on that or not. It's pretty similar to what they had previously. But we're going to expand that to the content management piece, which is where they will take is the document management, and they will take approximately 1 million of our documents off of the AS400 and convert those into the Tyler software so that they're easily accessible and associated with the parcel that they reference. So that'll be something really exciting. Everybody's looking forward to that. Just an easier way and a safer way to manage our documents. Of note, this could be expanded to other departments for other types of documents. We could scan into this program. We want to see how it works with real estate before we actually offer that solution. The network switch upgrade was completed last weekend. IP Pathways assisted with this. There's still some issues with the NCIC network that Kenny's been working on, so we hope to have those resolved very soon. Update on the DOT fiber project. I did meet with Sean Cole from Planning and Zoning of Nevada to discuss right-of-way for the proposed trenching that we'll need to do between where the DOT leaves the fiber off at the hospital to the Justice Center by making that loop, by making that fiber connection, we'll start a loop between us and Ames. I did give him an aerial map of the proposed trenching. He thought it looked okay, but just reminded us we need to avoid all water lines. And I did have communication innovators there with us in the meeting so that they could answer any questions that Sean might have. He did tell us the documents that we need to fill out and submit for this project. So I think we're in the timeline. He'd like those by June, so I think we're good for that. I was approached by planning and development for a way to refine our forms and payments via the Story County website. And we've put a lot of money in this website. We want to be able to use it a little better. What they're looking for is ways to improve the user experience, like, for instance, filling out forms, applications, and making payments. You can do this right now through the treasurers and the assessors, but what we're looking for is something that they won't have to come to the office as much for. And one of the problems with making online payments is that you pay your $3 service charge for everything. What we'd like to do is create a shopping cart type of solution where you can go pay your property tax, pay your vehicle registration, and whatever else, add it to your shopping cart, and then check out at the end and only pay one service charge. So this is actually three different pieces, so it would involve three different softwares. We've talked to Civic Plus about it. They do have an ePay module. However, we'd still have to find a way to get that payment to the bank or to us. And we did bring Adam from the local bank in to discuss options that his customers are doing. So this is kind of still in the beginning stages. We're just doing information gathering right now. I think it would be a great asset for us to be able to do this kind of stuff.
Well, I think that was part of the discussion for the new website, is that that
absolutely,
you know, those
that we would have that option. We didn't choose to do to use their e-payment piece. There's some restrictions on it that we'd have to work around as far as getting the money out. And all they'd do is take the funds. They wouldn't transfer them to anybody. So, and the fee they charge is, I think, a little high to us. But it's certainly something that we're looking into. And then I just wanted to finish by stating that we did replace someone in the IT department this quarter. The computer support analyst position became vacant in February. We recently hired Brian Wild, who's an Ames resident. He has over 10 years' experience in IT support role, and he's got some experience with mobile devices, which I think will come in handy as we support the sheriff's laptops in their cars. The final page, everybody, is kind of a human interest story. Everybody wants to see, okay, what parts of the website do people visit the most? And so you'll see the pie chart. And then the second page is an explanation of those. And as you can see, inmate roster is right up there toward the top. So,
interesting.
And then followed by the assessor and then some other things. So I thought I'd include that. Any questions? I know I buzzed through this pretty fast.
Really good. Remind me what we're doing with wireless for this building. We put it into next year's budget. Any expected timeline?
We moved it to this year's budget from next year. Kenny wanted to finish the network upgrade with the switch replacement before he dug into that, but that is, I'm glad you mentioned that because that is our next project, and he will be starting work on that. What we'd like to do is, we do have some wireless at the CLP building and HSC. We'd like to expand that to all the buildings and have some type of, we're still formulating what type of free access we want, like in the lobby areas at the Sheriff's Department in here. So we're still in the planning stages, but yeah, that's the next on the docket.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Excellent. Thank you. Okay.
Next, we have Community Services and Deb Shildroth. Hi, Deb.
Morning. How are you?
I'm hanging in there.
Okay, great.
This is a recording period of about 6 minutes.
Yeah, you go ahead, I'll be right back.
I'll start off by talking a little bit about our general assistance program. Our numbers in this program compared to a year ago are down. So during the reporting period of September 2012 through February 2013, we served 39 single household cases through general assistance, 59 household cases for a total of 98 for that six-month period. That brings our year-to-date totals to 62 single individuals, 84 family households, 146 total. And that's about 55 less than a year ago last February. And we're not exactly sure what to contribute that to, but overall we see the utilization for especially rent and utilities being down compared to last year. Denials during the reporting period, we issued 463, and year-to-date, we've issued 662. That, too, is down by 51 denials issued compared to a year ago. Individuals who applied for assistance but did not complete the process, so they didn't bring all of their they didn't come back and return the paperwork. There were 50 during the reporting period. Our year-to-date total is 65, and that's about 7 individuals less than a year ago. And Rick, I had mentioned our numbers are down in general assistance compared to a year ago this time. Primary types of assistance, rent, we paid out $30,095 through the six-month period. In utilities, we paid out $2,415. And in miscellaneous, which primarily would be medications, transportation, and burials, we paid out $15,230. Most of that is in burials.
Your utilities, will they go back up now? Doesn't the moratorium come off next month?
The end of April, I believe so. November, December, January, and February are lower months. Mm-hmm. Yep. And in our process, is if when individuals come in after the moratorium is lifted, if they have a back bill, they have to find other means to get that caught up. We only cover the current month's utilities. And when they sign up for LIHEAP, they sign a contract of some sort, and they're agreeing to pay something towards their utilities during the moratorium. The moratorium doesn't just allow an individual or a family to not pay any utilities, but they're supposed to try and pay something towards the utilities during that period of time. In substance abuse, we funded 34 individuals during the reporting period, and that brings our year-to-date total up to 48. Again, this is for court-committed treatment for substance abuse. The asset process, the asset administrative team reviewed fiscal year 14 agency budgets. We now have 32 agencies in the process. Liaisons completed their visits and reports. We had the hearings and panel work sessions in January. And a total of $3.2 million from all four funders has been allocated to 31 agencies for fiscal year 14. And that's about a 4.25% increase over fiscal year 13's funding level. And Story County has about 40% of that. So a lot of good work. The volunteers are just awesome during this process. And so we're really pleased that we can continue this kind of a funding collaboration here in Story County. Under MHDD, our case management program, we served an average 356 clients. We had approximately 40 referrals and 27 discharges. Most of those discharges are a result of the residency rules that are changing come July 1st, where funding is no longer dependent on the old concept of legal settlement, but it's based on residency. And so we've been working on transferring those case management clients who live outside of Story County, technically outside our region, then to those case management programs in the counties that they are residing in. We still have, I think, about 12 individuals that we're serving in Polk County because the distance is relatively short. We're working on transferring those towards this last quarter of the fiscal year. We're actually doing kind of an exchange with Polk County because they've got clients that have been receiving services up here, so we're trying to do that in a more coordinated fashion. Because of the number of referrals we've been getting throughout this fiscal year, we have worked with another county in our region, and they needed cases, and so they've picked up about 10 of our cases. And so I think that is just a good first example of some of the things that we're able to do within our region. And kind of do that exchange.
What is a reasonable caseload size?
Between 30 and 32. Our state, the state law allows 45 for a full-time case manager, and we set through our policies and procedures 35 as being the maximum level. But usually 30 to 32 seems to be a pretty manageable level. It depends a lot, too, on how active your caseload is. If you're serving more individuals that have mental illness and they tend to be going through crises more often. That can be pretty time consuming. Or if you're serving a lot of children who are on the children's mental health waiver and, again, going through crises with the family. It just really all kind of depends. We try to, in our case management program, we try to balance those cases out so not one case manager or two case managers have all of the MI folks or you know, children with mental illness, but we try to balance that out so they have a pretty level caseload. What's helping from an efficiency standpoint is the case management module that's been added to the CSN system. We've got all of our case notes in that system now. That tallies up our billable contacts. We'll be able to bill through that system here hopefully by July 1st. We're one of the testing counties for that. And so everything is becoming a little more automated and have a little bit different tracking system, and that's helping to create some efficiencies. Other activities going on in our office throughout the reporting period. In September, we had Linda Semler, who had been with the county for a little over 15 years as our financial data manager, retired. And so we reorganized some of those duties and gave those to Carla Webb, who's now our financial person and our intake coordinator. And then we did, in place of Linda, we added another service coordinator position. And Nikki Lullman joined us in November in that particular position. So what's important about service coordination is that's a core service in the mental health redesign plan. So we want to be able to stage ourselves and be prepared for what might come down as a result of that being a core service. And then we had a case manager, Lisa Osterkamp, who left, I believe it was in September. She relocated to North Carolina. And Tiffany Houghton replaced her in November as well. So we have the case management program fully staffed with the case managers at this point in time. In September, the board members, you all met with McTeam and DHS Director Chuck Palmer and Division Director Rick Schultz to discuss transition issues.
A lot of good it did us.
We're still in transition. McTeam and the Story County Auditor staff also attended the Transition Fund application training. That was a requirement in order to apply for transition funding. So then in October, we spent a majority of that month working on the transition application so we could get that turned in to DHS by November 1st. In November, McTeam met with members of AMIS. AMIS members wanted to meet with us and talk about the jail diversion program and then any anticipated impacts that redesign might have on that service and any other services. And then we also hosted a meeting with our local providers to give them an update on redesign in the transition funds. Also in November, the board voted to support the development of our MHDS region with Franklin, Hardin, Hamilton, Boone, Marshall, and Madison counties. December, DHS released their transition fund report, and they had the three different scenarios. In scenario one, Story County would receive $750,000. In scenario two, $325,000. And in scenario one, or scenario three, zero. And we now know where we stand with that because House File 160 was passed by both the House and the Senate, and we're waiting for Governor Branstad to sign that bill, and we're due to receive $750,000. Those are federal dollars, so there are going to be some things that we have to watch with regards to that. Also in December and in ongoing, we're working with the residency changes, primarily through the CSN system, so we're looking at who we're picking up come July 1st and who we can transfer. And we've identified that there are about 90 clients we'll be transferring to other counties or other regions to fund. And we're still working on our number of how many clients we'll be picking up. It'll probably be at least that many clients. And then in January, we started working on our 28E agreement for regionalization and the letter of intent. And that's brings us to questions or comments?
Not on this report, Deb, but since we have the board here, and particularly Rick and Paul, I attended the MHDD commission, and I don't know if I didn't just saw the information that I received. Deb serves on that commission, and perhaps you just might just give a cursory overview of some of the activities and actions that were discussed. I was very impressed sitting in that meeting, and of course Director Palmer, as normal, and Schultz, Rick was there. Yes, he was there, and so they gave a report and recommendations. But I think that we see some positive things happening, and also Deb might just—I know at a later time she'll probably give us more detail about our Webster City meeting and regionalization meeting and so forth. But if she could just kind of give you guys just a little brief overview of kind of where we are, particularly with the 2080 that it was being proposed, that will be coming back to us a little bit in the work with Jessica. Okay.
I'll just start with the commission meeting. That was the commission meets every month, and we met last week. And some of the highlights of that, DHS always gives an update on mental health and disability services, and Rick Schultz and Teresa Armstrong were there to do that. And they talked a lot about the different pieces of legislation flowing through the state legislature at this point in time, talked about transition funds. I don't recall them talking much about the Medicaid budget, but there is a shortfall for this current fiscal year in the Medicaid budget that the legislature will have to deal with yet before they adjourn session. I can't even remember how much they're looking at the shortfall, but millions of dollars that...
Oh, it was in the 40s.
Yeah, I was going to say 40s or 50s.
44 is the number that pops out to me.
There was quite a bit of time. There's an update on the mental health system for children, youth, and families. There's a work group that's continuing to meet to help get that system developed. There are pilot projects in three different areas of the state right now called systems of care that they want to replicate and figure out how to fund that and be able to get those services provided. Then there was quite a bit of discussion on core services. That's part of Senate File 2315 that was passed last year. Core services go into effect July 1st, and there are several of those services that still need definition put towards them. And so there's an ad hoc committee created within the commission, and I did offer to sit on that to help come up with those definitions so that there would be some guidance and management of that. So we'll work with members of the commission on that, as well as Renee Schulte, who has been hired by the state as a consultant to help with redesign. So she'll help us in that core services discussion. Those were sort of the main themes of that particular meeting. Did you have anything, Wayne, you wanted to ask?
I just basically say that in the definition and the discussions leading up to forming this committee to look at the core services, it was really interesting to have DHS kind of go back and talk about the legislation and what was already in there and trying to define the definitions of core services, et cetera. And I don't think there was a lot of overall confusion of that, but it still, I think, appears that they haven't really finalized exactly what those things are expected to be. They say, well, the legislation already addresses them. And so some of the other core plus, where counties are not really sure of is just what is going to be the level of support funding-wise to move forward into the next fiscal year. And so I think the work group and the commission certainly is recognizing that we're just at the starting gate, getting ready to get into the starting blocks. The gun has already gone off in my mind, but we have a tremendous shortfall in terms of the overall funding support. But at least the entities are all talking to one another. There's the House and the Senate is talking in terms of a plan of action. I think it's everybody's guess that hopefully they're going to come together in either conference committee and try to iron out some of those differences so that we can move the needle forward in providing at least some funding so that CPCs and supervisors will have something definite to plan for as they move forward in the next few months. The other thing, Deb, you might just touch base on is our regionalization meeting, just kind of where, in your opinion, things are right now based upon that meeting.
We defied the weather and had our regional meeting in Webster City a week ago yesterday after, I think, two cancellations and rescheduling because of the weather. And so we got everybody to sign the letter of intent and decided to send with that our contracts that we have with Mary Greeley Medical Center and then our local mental health centers to verify that we do have those services in place. I do anticipate a response back from DHS once they do get our letter of intent that they may need more information, which will probably prompt a visit to our region. So that's kind of what's been happening throughout the state as other regions have submitted their letters of intent. So I think we'll probably see the same kind of response. So we got the letter of intent taken care of, and then we spent most of the time looking at the draft of the 28E agreement. That was the first time that all parties were together to take a look at that. There were some suggestions, and I took those back to Jessica, and she either agreed with them or we left them up as questions so that we can get back together again and take a look at that. We in the letter or in the 28E agreement, there's a section on regional finances, and we sort of came to a standstill at that and decided that there needed to be some fiscal policies agreed upon first before we tackled that section of the 28E agreement. So that section is put on hold until we look at fiscal policies in which we're going to bring our county auditors in to help formulate those. And so that'll we have another meeting with the county auditors set up on April 5th. Our next regional meeting, and I've sent that out already, is April 25th, and that'll be held here in this room, actually. Is there anything else you can think of, Wayne?
No, but I thought it was really interesting during some of the discussions about the rules and the guidelines, and that your chair of your commission, as well as you, spoke. You know, the guidelines basically talked about the letter of intent to form the regions, but yet counties who have already sent that in now were being they were needing additional information such as the contracts and all the different type of things. And what's interesting, there's nowhere in the legislation did it ask for that information, but all of a sudden, this is what now is being expected, and this is kind of the example of what we constantly see happening over and over again, is that we have the legislation says one thing, but then either DHS or someone basically decides that, you know, this is the way, you know, additional information that they're going to need. And CPCs are somewhat at a quandary saying, well, you know, why can't those things be identified right up front so that we know what's necessary to be provided? But I thought that Deb and the chair handled that as diplomatically as they possibly could in pointing out the frustrations that counties were having in regard to that.
We did. Last October, at a statewide CPC meeting, and Rick Schultz and Teresa Armstrong were present, and we asked for clarification as far as what was needed to be included in a letter of intent. So 6 months ago, we asked for the clarification, and we kept getting pointed back to the legislation. It's spelled out in the legislation. It's spelled out in legislation. So that's what we're trying to follow. But I think there's even more scrutiny now and more reading or interpretation into what the legislation says. And so we're being asked to provide additional information. At this point in time, though, I guess our region feels we'll send in the information that we think is pertinent to what the legislation requires. And if they want more, they'll just have to tell us.
Stay tuned.
Yes, exactly.
Anything else for Deb?
No.
Deb, thank you very much.
Yep, thank you.
Liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Wayne, anything?
No, actually, Deb and I, we spent a little bit of the time traveling together, and so we covered most of it. It was the topic of what just happened at the Mental Health Commission and so forth, so we didn't need to meet.
Perfect. Outstanding. Paul, anything?
No.
You don't want to tell us about the cruise?
No.
Okay. Other reports? Nothing. Public forum number two. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on this agenda. The board may not take any action due to the requirements of the open meetings law, but may do so in the future. Is there anyone wishing to address the board? Announcements from the supervisors. Wayne?
No, just have a HRTA board meeting coming up on Thursday, and we have made a few changes in the local office. We're still trying to work through just a few things with some of our clients. One of the most notable ones is that past practice, they got used to a certain frequency of pickup and request that was not cost effective. And so one of the things is we've tried to designate that in certain outlying communities outside of Ames that the service will be provided during certain hours. And we're asking clients to try to plug in their requests during that time. And in most cases, most of them are accepting this okay, but there's a few that this is been a problem, and we've had some publicity, and we've had a few people call, and our director has tried to talk directly to them. We're trying to set up a one-on-one meeting to address some of their particular concerns, but many of the problems I think are being addressed and cleared up, but it's of all the counties that have gone through the transition, Story County has been the most challenging for us. And we're kind of looking at maybe providing a similar service in two other counties, but much smaller population and much smaller ridership. But I just wanted you to be aware, in case you got calls, that every time we do get a call or a letter or a request, that someone addresses that, and we try to mitigate how we can improve the service.
Okay. Thank you very much. Paul, anything?
Yep.
There was a day that I could stay awake for 30 hours without it affecting me, but that day
that
is
fast.
Yeah, that day is long gone. I'm getting punchy. Motion to adjourn.
So move.
Second.
All those in favor, please say aye. Aye. We're adjourned. Send the Freedom of Information to me. No reason for it to go to Ron. Let it go to me, and I'll take care of it.
Okay.
Yep. It'll be tomorrow before I get to it.
Okay. I was just EAC. What does that stand for?
Employee Action.
Oh, okay.
Committee.
And then you're talking about the Central Committee, the Story County Central Committee, the
Dallas. Yeah, typically that's not on there.
Okay.
It's on my calendar.
Okay, so guys, that was just kind of the air. You're not
going to
super relevant.
Yeah.
Okay,
nope.
I've got those quotes. I've got,